Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Okay, we are here down at Woodville's Drive. Sal Capaccio with you, and ready in about 1 hour from now to hear from the Buffalo Bills general manager, Brandon Bean, of course. He will speak to the media for his end-of-season press conference. And then we're going to hear later today from Sean McDermott at 2 p.m. Someone asked me on Twitter a little while ago, and you can find me there too, at Sal Sports, by the way, if it is common for the general manager and head coach of the team to be speaking at separate times. And yes, the answer is, it is common. They do actually usually speak at different times. And today will be no different. And I'm sure that's because Brandon Bean has his staff and meetings to go through, exit meetings. Sean McDermott has his as well. And then we hear from one and then the other. So that will happen today, 11 a.m., Brandon Bean. Excuse me, 2 p.m., Sean McDermott. We will carry Brandon Bean live here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, because that's what this show is, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Welcome in today. And, of course, I would guess that One Bills Live will carry Sean McDermott live when that happens, starting at 2 p.m. So I'm down here. I'm actually literally in the hallway leading into One Bills Drive into the media room. So you might be familiar with this hallway when Matt Bove and I do what we call hallway episodes for It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. And we might do a hallway episode today, actually, because we'll hear from Brandon Bean. We'll have some time, and then we're going to probably record a Always Game Day in Buffalo. In the meantime, I'm in the hallway here, so if you hear people walking and milling around behind me and doors opening and closing, my apologies for live radio like that, but that's what we do here, right? We're live here to make sure that we can bring you what's going on right here at One Bills Drive. So that's what's going to be happening here over the next little while. But in the meantime, between now and 11 a.m., I want to do a couple things. I can kind of grab some people here, other media members. I have Alex Brasky, who's going to be joining me here in just a little while, about 10 minutes from now. Alex just showed up in the media room himself. Saw Sal Majerana in there, John Warrow in there. We're seeing a lot of people now start to filter in for the press conference. But Alex from Batavia Daily and the editor of Bills Digest is going to join me here in just a little while. We'll go over, you know, what he foresees for the offseason for the Buffalo Bills. But I really want to take your phone calls and get connected with you, getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And the phone number is 803-0550. So here we go. 803-0550 is the number. Give me a call with basically any kind of comment, question, opinion related to the Bills offseason. We can look back on Sunday if you'd like. I'm trying not to do that as much as possible, but it's what we have to do. It's part of the job, right? And it's been a rough few days for all of us to think back and look back. I've kind of sort of turned the page a little bit here to the offseason. I mean, I'm more than kind of sort of, I guess, by now. But over the last few days, it's been tough to do that because, hey, when you get so close and it's right there and it's so many times, and especially this time, to be literally 10 plus minutes away from making the Super Bowl and having the lead, you know, it's tough to really kind of reconcile that you're standing here today talking about what could have been, should have been, and what ifs. And that's where we are today once again. And it hurts. It hurts for a lot of you. I know that. It hurts for all of us here in Western New York. We'll be back, though. Of course we will, because we always are. I mean, this organization, this fan base, went through going to four Super Bowls, losing them all, and becoming national jokes and memes. And, well, maybe memes weren't existing, but, you know, parodied around the country and still are for a lot of it. But for a long time that happened, and it didn't matter. Guess what happened in 1994, the year after the Bills went to their four Super Bowls and lost? People were still there hoping the team would be good again and go back again. It didn't happen. They didn't make the playoffs. 95, they go back to the playoffs, and then they wind up losing in the playoffs in 95. The point is, the fan base will be back. We will all recover. We'll be back here in July for training camp at St. John Fisher. We'll be back here in August for preseason games. And then the season will start again in September. It'll be the last year at this Highmark Stadium. Be a lot to celebrate. And we'll be right back to watching the standings and wondering if the Kansas City Chiefs can actually be beaten in the AFC West, and maybe the Bills can become the one seed. Because that's kind of where I've landed on, you know, what it's going to take, right? One of the things it's going to take. Now, I get this. I understand when I say this, I might sound a little crazy, because last year the Bills did have the Kansas City Chiefs at home and they still lost. But man, that one seed is a really big deal. And I do think that, like, having the one seed and only having to win one game and then hosting the AFC Championship is a huge benefit. And the Bills weren't able to do that this year, despite winning what would have been 14 games probably if they didn't have to rest their players at the end of the year and, you know, weren't in that situation. But still, they win 13, could have won 14 if they needed to. And they still only were able to get the two seed because the Chiefs had such a terrific year record-wise and won so many close games. And that mattered. Kansas City got Houston at home in one game, and then bam, they're playing at home in the AFC Championship. They get a whole week off to get in the lab, figure out what they want to do in the AFC Championship. They came up with a great plan, and the Bills didn't match it. And the Bills got outcoached, and the Bills got outplayed in the championship game. If you have that one week off, and you're playing at home against the lowest surviving seed, and then you win that game, you get one game at home to go to the Super Bowl. I think that's got to be kind of still the goal of this organization. The goal's got to be kind of to get that one seed still. I mean, when they played the Chiefs at home in 2023, last year's playoffs, and lost, let's remember what happened. They had to do it on 6 days rest because of the snow game the week before against the Steelers. They had a bunch of injuries. Those things mattered. I think that's got to be still the mindset and goal. How do you get over the Chiefs? That's one step, one way to do it. How else do you do it? I don't know. I'm throwing my hands up too. Better coaching, of course. Better playing, of course. You know, the fire Sean McDermott crowd that's out there, I still don't have an answer to what that guarantees you. You do that, are you just going to do it for one game because you can't beat the Chiefs? Because 13 wins is still really good, and getting the number two seed is really good, and getting the AFC Championship game is really good. And I'm not guaranteed to get any of that with any new coach or other coach. Someone said to me the other day, well, you got to make a change for the sake of making change. I don't agree with that at all. I want a plan. This organization's in a good spot. I don't want to just make a change to make a change. This isn't the Sabres situation where they're not good and maybe you need to just shake things up to shake things up. That's not what you do here when you have a team that's been the second most successful team in the entire league, meaning wins-wise, over the last 7-8 years. But I don't know. And I know a lot of you have answers or at least opinions on that. So we'll get to that. 803-0550 is the telephone number to call. We'll talk a lot about the offseason. I will say this for the Buffalo Bills. They're in a much better position right now than they were a year ago. As far as their roster, as far as their salary cap. They have 17 pending unrestricted free agents as of right now. 17. And out of those 17, there is not one player that moves the needle enough to me to say, ooh, you can't let that guy go. You might want a franchise tag or transition tag. There's nice players. You'd like to get Ty Johnson back. You'd like to get Mac Hollins back. No doubt about it. I'd like to get, you know, a guy like Juwan Smoot. He's a little older, but, you know, be nice to have him come back. But these are not needle movers to the point of, boy, you cannot replace these players. Last year, it was a little different. From a trade to letting walk in free agency to releases, the names, the leadership that walked out the door. Not the case this year. This team is largely intact, and that should give you some hope. But what does hope matter right now as we're sitting here watching the Kansas City Chiefs prepare for their third straight Super Bowl? 803-0550 is the telephone number to call. Let's start us off with Alex on a cell. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Sal. I want to start off with appreciation and gratitude for the 2024 Bills. Records were set this year offensively. Amazing on the turnover margin. You know, we still fell short, and it still should be the goal. As a 43-year-old man raising a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old, having these conversations about the Buffalo Bills has been really challenging. But it's easy to overreact. It really is easy to overreact. We are a razor-thin margin with arguably the greatest team in NFL history. So I completely disagree with flipping their mattress and firing McDermott. I think that is irrational. It's emotional. And it's understandably because it's cumulative. As a 43-year-old Bills fan, I know we all have scars. Anybody who's over 35 and above, we know what it takes and what it's been through. But I want to talk about the offense. Second in points. And that's with Josh Allen not playing six quarters of the season. Our offense would have been significantly better if we would have actually, if we needed to be. But we didn't need to because we were put ourselves in a great situation to close out the game. But this falls completely on the defense in my perspective. Yes, the offense could be tweaked. We just set records. Why would we change that, right? But the defense is the issue to me. If punts are turnovers, then let's talk about it. We were 29th, Sal, 29th on third down. We were middle of the pack with points against, middle of the pack with yards against, and we had 32 turnovers. If we didn't have those 32 turnovers, man, Sal, this defense would have been atrocious. So this all goes back on Bean. I don't think it's all on Babich, but Babich has to do some growing up. McDermott has to step in. We need some defensive pressure at the front line because on third down, you got to get to the quarterback. All right? And our linebackers are good. We do need a little bit of depth because Milano is, you know, to play 17 games is asking him to do something he probably hasn't done in 5 years. So let's hang on, guys. Bills, we're going to stick together. It's what we do as Bills Mafia. It's part of our DNA. Yeah, we take a punch, but we get back up. I'm really looking forward to 2025. I think Bean has learned a lot, and I'm hoping that this whole organization can stick together, and let's relax a little bit. Appreciate what we just did in 2024. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, Alex. Thanks for the call. Good thoughts right there. I agree. The defense could not get stops this year, and actually, if it wasn't for the turnovers, and I agree, and I kept saying, the turnovers, are they sustainable? They were sustainable, but if they didn't get the turnovers, they didn't get teams to punt the ball away to them. Alex Brasky joins me right now here in the hallway of One Bills Drive outside the Bills media room. Bills Digest editor and Batavia Daily, right? I want to get the right outlet for you.
Correct. I feel like Matt Bove, the hallway episodes of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you got it. This is just the audio version here, so you can't see us right now. Matt and I will do one later with a video version. All right, what are you expecting to, what do you want to know? What's on your mind from Brandon Bean and then Sean McDermott today?
I want to know what the plan is in terms of the draft. They haven't gotten enough out of their top picks the past two, three, maybe even dating back 4 years. You look at Greg Rousseau. You look at Dalton Kincaid. You look at Kaiir Elam. All three of those players, relative no-shows in the game against the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. So I want to know if Brandon Bean is more willing to give up those picks in this year's draft. I know that they've talked all the time in the past about holding on to those picks, draft capital, wanting to put themselves in a good position come April, but things haven't worked out in the past few years in terms of those top draft picks, so I want to know if he's more willing to move off of that this year.
Anything on the field from McDermott? We just took a call as you were walking out here from someone who just said, look, the defense is the issue. They couldn't get stops on third downs. They relied on turnovers. Something has to change in the defense. What part of the defense has to change? Is it more on the coaching side, more on the personnel side? What do you think they have to do?
I think for anybody who follows me on X, they know that I stray toward the personnel side. I think players on the field win the games. The coaches put you in position, and Sean McDermott has done that time and again. Now, the numbers do say, and you can't deny, the numbers, particularly against the Chiefs in the playoffs, have not been good. And that matchup seems to be a bugaboo for him. But look at the players on the field when it comes to these games and the lack of performance. I talk about a Greg Rousseau, and I think it lies on the defensive line. I think you really need to upgrade on the edge. You tried to do that with Von Miller years ago. The injury certainly played a role into his demise on this team, but you need to upgrade on the edge. You need to get a running mate for Ed Oliver. It needs to start up front, and that's going to allow everything in the back end to flourish, but yeah, I lie on the personnel side, and a lot of people talking about the stops that the Bills needed. They got two stops in the second half. I know that they were atrocious in the first half, but in the second half, that's when you win games, and the defense came through with two stops, and they held them to a field goal late in that game. They set Josh Allen up with a chance to win the game, as Bills fans have been pleading for year after year, and he didn't come through. Am I putting the loss solely at Josh Allen's feet? No, he had a great season, but my point is the defense did come up with stops in that game. Just didn't finish.
Is there anything on the offensive side you think they didn't have that could have added to closing that deal?
wide receiver for sure. You couldn't find anybody open down the field. I mentioned Dalton Kincaid's lack of production. Had a good season last season. I think 70 receptions, 700 yards. He went down about 30 receptions and 300 yards this season. And you can chalk that up to injury, but correct me if I'm wrong, Sale. He wasn't limited on the injury report for the past several weeks. He's being put out there to play week after week. I'm not sure how much you can chalk up his lack of production to that injury. I think you commend him for pushing through, but I'm not sure you give him a pass on the lack of production. The everybody eats mantra certainly played into that as well, and I think that's where you need to find an answer. That's all well and good throughout the course of the season, getting everybody involved, but when you go up against the league's best like you do against the Kansas City Chiefs, you need people to win down the field, and Mac Hollins was your top guy winning down the field in that game. You need Keon Coleman to take another step, but I think you need to peruse the free agent market and perhaps in the draft to find another piece.
Speaking of free agents, I have my window open here, my roster. Everybody in green here is an pending unrestricted free agent. I just said there's nobody that moves the needle. Oh, my God, you got to get that guy back. Nice players, Ty Johnson, Mac Hollins, no one that rises to the level of franchise or even transition tag. Would there be a priority on here for you for any of these players?
Yeah, I tweeted out my list earlier this week, and one of the controversial ones that everybody obviously pushed back on, I think anybody who follows the team can kind of see this coming. I said Damar Hamlin. I think you can get him at a good cost. He's been a great locker room presence for this team, and he's that trustworthy piece in the back end. You're probably going to have Cole Bishop as your starter next year, but if you can get Damar Hamlin as a depth piece at the back end, I think that's going to help you. Also, Ty Johnson. I think what he gave you this year as a backup to James Cook, I think you got to bring him back. And then I mentioned Mac Hollins, what he gave you against his Kansas City Chiefs. He gave you far and away more than what anybody expected. I think he was kind of a punchline at the start of the season and was one as the season wore on due to his outfits and everything, but the production really outweighed that punchline status, and I'd re-sign Mac Hollins as well. I think one that isn't a priority for me is Amari Cooper. I like what he did in terms of bringing a potential matchup beater to this offense, but the injury slowed him down, and I think his age is going to start slowing him down. I'm just not sure he's what you're looking for in that matchup beater moving forward.
All right, buddy. At Alex Brasky on Twitter, right? I mean, obviously, Bills Digest, what do you got coming up for you guys to start with your off-season content?
Yeah, we have a deadline of Monday, our print edition, our season reviews, so that'll be going out via U.S. Postal Service. It's also available in digital form as well for all of our subscribers. You can follow our work at thedailynewsonline.com. A.J. Cebulski has concluded his work with us, but we've recently brought in Mike Rose, so we have a new reporter that's going to be helping out. So plenty of coverage to come in the off season, and a lot of questions to be answered as normal for the Bills when they fall short of their ultimate goal.
No doubt about it. Alex, thanks for coming out here. I appreciate you, buddy. Thank you. That is Alex Brasky, Bills Digest, Batavia Daily. Follow him on Twitter at Alex Brasky. All right, we can take another couple calls here before we get to the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Ken in North Tonawanda. Actually, my screen is frozen. Can you bring Ken up for me there, Josh? I'd really appreciate it. Let's go to Ken in North Tonawanda. Hi, Ken.
Hey, so let's start with this. You know, there's this thing called reversion to the mean, right? And I think that it's one of the toughest things to do in the NFL is to beat a team twice in a year, just in your division. To beat a really good team twice in a year is very, very tough. Just ask Lamar, you know, that question, how tough it is to beat someone twice in a year, right? Same thing for the Bills and Chiefs. When we go back to one of the best teams I've ever seen, which was the New England Patriots losing to the Giants on a helmet catch, how's that any different than Andrews dropping a pass, right, in the end zone that should have been caught? So I think it's really, really tough to beat a team twice in a year. The second thing is, as far as personnel goes, I always kind of thought the equation was Coleman plus Carter is greater than Worthy. I wanted to get your take on that. And as far as drafting goes in management, what is the rationale in taking a guy like Coleman, who might have been the fifth or sixth best receiver in this year's draft, versus a guy like Cooper DeJean, who was probably second best at his spot, or Edgerrin Cooper, who, you know, the linebacker that Green Bay took, who probably looks like a Pro Bowler next year? I wanted to get your thoughts on those things.
Well, listen, I think that it just comes down to the rationale is value, right? Where you think you have, where you need. Cooper DeJean was seen as a guy that, was he a safety? Was he a corner? Where would you play him? I think they felt good with Christian Benford and Rasul Douglas and, of course, Taron Johnson. I think, you know, they did take Cole Bishop in the second round at safety. So I think that's where that lies. They didn't feel that that was the need at that particular time in that particular spot. And as far as Coleman, no doubt. I mean, look, everybody makes something about the, you know, the trade of Worthy for Coleman, or however you want to put it, to give the Chiefs the spot where they took Worthy, and then eventually the Bills go down and they take Coleman. Sure. I mean, I never had a problem with trading with the Chiefs. I think you got to do what's best for you, and if that's the deal on the table, who cares? They're gonna get their guy anyway. If you don't take that guy, they're gonna find a way to trade. The issue might be though. Maybe you should have had a better evaluation of how Worthy would impact your offense, right? I don't know. I mean, it just comes down to value. It's a great question, but these things are inexact sciences, right? I mean, they go through this draft process, and Ken, and you know that this is how they come up with. Maybe they should have said, hey, we could use a guy with Coleman speed. We all said they need speed. Worthy's speed. But at the end of the day, they didn't value him enough, obviously, because they were literally in the spot where they could have taken him and said, that's not our guy.
Hey, but so one other question for you. What is the rationale of using draft capital to go down and taking a guy like Brian Thomas or versa at those spots? I mean, you know, like we talk about defensive end. Would it have been worth two ones and a couple twos to go down and take versa if we really believed we needed an edge guy?
Well, I think there's a few things here, and thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. Josh, you're going to have to bring up some of the callers here and help me out. If you can send me a little screenshot or something there of the callers. I just texted you. I appreciate it. I have to fix my computer on this end. In the meantime, let me say this. The rationale is maybe they tried. I don't know. How do we know that they didn't make calls? How do we know that, you know, the Rams didn't want to trade that pick? I don't really know. I think that everything's done in a vacuum all the time. I hear all the time, why weren't the Bills? Certainly, all draft picks who don't work out could be second-guessed. And it's an exact science, like I said. I mean, it's tough. You make great points, Ken. I don't have the answers for you, though, right? I mean, it's a process they go through. And, you know, people have banged on, you know, the Bills' last few top draft picks. Look, Dalton Kincaid had a historic rookie season for a tight end. That was not a bad draft pick. I think the issue with the Dalton Kincaid pick now is if you're going to take a tight end number one or your first-round pick, then by the time he gets to his second year, I think he needs to be a bigger part of your offense, and that never happened for whatever reason. But Dalton Kincaid was not a bad draft pick. He actually had a great rookie season, one of the best all-time rookie seasons for a tight end, believe it or not. But it was a step back this year. Because they have this everybody eats mentality, they're running the ball, and that becomes, well, then why did you spend the draft capital on a tight end last year in the first round if that's what you're going to do? So I think that has to be evaluated, and if you're going to take that player and you have the same front office and the same head coach and, you know, the same, I guess, offense with, even though you have Joe Brady taking over, I think you have to kind of decide, well, that's going to be where you're going to go, then you have to use it to the maximum value of what you're trying to get. We all know that Kyrie Elam hasn't worked out. I mean, that's just something they're going to have to address this offseason in some way, shape, or form. All right, let's go to who's up next? Julian in Buffalo. Hi, Julian. You're on WGR.
Hey, what's going on, Sal? I haven't been listening to the radio. Normally, I listen to you guys every single day. But I rewatched the game last night in the All-22. I don't know who put a majority blame on, what, the coaches, the refs, defense. I feel like we give Josh Allen a pass. This man had 3 minutes left, three timeouts, down by three, and right after the Chiefs kicked that field goal, the freaking camera panned to him, and this dude had his puppy dog eyes. Like, he was already scared and sad. Like, he was about to cry, like, he already lost. And where was the dog in him? Where's that dude that's screaming at everybody's face during the 13-second game, hyping everybody up when Mahomes scored a touchdown? He's ready. Okay, he scored. I'm about to go back and score again. Where was that dude at? Where's the rest of the team on the sideline hyping them up? Okay, Josh, this is what we've been asking for. You got 3 minutes left, so win us the game. All you need is a touchdown. My man basically went 3-and-out. The first play I watched on the All-22, it was a handoff to Ty Johnson. This communication on Connor McGovern and Osiris Torrance. Torrance literally walked away from the dude right in front of him and chased after the linebacker, allowed the dude right in front of him to get right to Ty Johnson. Lost play right there. Josh Allen runs, uses legs, get a first down. And after that, what, a throwaway, here's the next play, another box play, and then we got, like, we did nothing. The play call was horrible. Everybody's locked up. And then we got to put not majority, but for me, I put majority blame on Josh. You had 3 minutes left, three timeouts, down by three. I don't know, dude. But that's what drives me crazy. I don't care about what happened with the refs, defensive play calls, defensive personnel. At the end of the day, Josh Allen had the ball with 3 minutes left and just marched down the field, and he failed. I don't know what else we can do about this. Obviously, I'm going to still ruin and love this team, but that's where I'm at right now. Love you guys. Go
what do you suggest you do? Yeah. What do you suggest you do? You're not gonna change your elite franchise quarterback who might win the MVP in 7 days. You know? I mean, listen, your criticisms are not invalid as far as having that situation with that quarterback and not getting it done. I think a lot goes into it, though. I'm not gonna go to he wasn't hyped up enough or didn't have dog mentality enough. I don't think that's it. But certainly, you know, in that situation, if I said to you, or Bills fans, I'm going to give you the ball to Josh Allen with 3 minutes left in the game, down three, you'd probably take it. And that's what happened 2 years in a row, and this team wasn't able to get it done. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Good calls coming in. I appreciate it. 803-0550. We can look back if you want, as Julian just did, or we can look ahead to the offseason as well. 17 pending unrestricted free agents, one pending RFA, restricted free agent, one pending ERFA, that is exclusive rights free agent. I could run through all that, but a lot to get to as well here at One Bills Drive. Brandon Bean speaks at 11 a.m. We'll carry it live for you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Bills General Manager Brandon Bean scheduled to speak at 11 a.m. from down here at One Bills Drive. We'll bring that to you live here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Here on a Thursday, Sal Capaccio with you, taking your calls at 803-0550. Before I get back to the phone lines, Josh Schmidt back at our Amherst Studios. How do you say the name of the city where Super Bowl 59 is? How do you say it?
New Orleans.
Okay. Well, some people say New Orleans.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I was going to say there was another way to say New Orleans. I didn't think about New Orleans.
Well, I mean, I don't know if there's another way, but I apparently there is. I don't know what I'd have to look it up. I've never actually dug into, and it might just literally depend on, you know, what your accent may be, where you're from, regionally, in the country, something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it might be that. And then, honestly, too, like if you think about like people in New Orleans, from New Orleans, their accents, it's Nolens or whatever. Like it's super deep.
Well,
deep
I will say,
South
growing
accent.
Up, I think I used to say New Orleans, the New Orleans Saints. I used to say when I was a kid, the New Orleans Saints.
I think the Saints are a big driver as to why people say New Orleans instead of New Orleans, because it sounds so weird to say New Orleans Saints. It's kind of like Caribbean and Caribbean, like Pirates of the Caribbean, but like
okay,
I'm going on
yep.
a trip to the Caribbean, like. I feel like it depends on what you're talking about or how you're talking about it.
By the way, I am actually doing that, what you just said, in like a little over a week.
Oh, really? Wow.
Going on a trip to the Caribbean, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, scheduled it for after what would have been a possible, parade and said, oh, get away for a week or so. So yeah, I'll be doing that during February break.
And you get to escape the snow, Greg and Clarence.
Yeah, there you go, Greg. How are you? You're on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Hey guys, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Oh, good, good. So, a couple callers ago, you had a guy say, "Well, it's hard to beat, you know, the same team twice in a year." I totally disagree with that. I feel like Kansas City saves things for the playoffs. They save a play or two. They save a certain way of a formation. A good example was the blitz at the end there. And, you know, I had to put it on McDermott because, you know, Brady's young. You know, he's still learning the league, and he's going to just keep getting better and better. And you can say, oh, on that last drive when Josh had the ball, the play calling was not good. And I agree with that, you know, but I think he'll learn. McDermott's had all these years to learn and still gets beat in the big games. You know, there was that third down play where Knox looked like he got a first down. Couldn't McDermott have thrown a red flag there to challenge that spot?
Yes, he could have, and I will tell you why they probably didn't. Because, A, generally those don't get overturned, but that being said, They wanted to save their timeouts, and on top of that, the biggest reason would be, which makes sense, they had the personnel on the field where they felt they could just get 1 yard on the tush push. So they wanted to go hurry up. And if you're going to go hurry up, then you're going to take yourself out of that situation, if that makes sense. So I don't have a problem with it. You can go back and second guess it, but it makes sense why you'd want to just keep the Chiefs in that personnel.
No, I understand. I mean, again, then I go back to Brady, who could have maybe, you know, one thing that I always think of is like line up like you're going to do a tush push. They've proven they can stop it. And then, you know, audible and go back into a shotgun formation where they run, you know, I mean, why there's
oh, no, sure. Listen, Greg, I think at the end of the day, hold on, let me say this. At the end of the day, I think something could have been different on those short yardage. The Chiefs obviously did a good job to plan for it, and the Bills still kept going back to it, and they didn't get it. It says out-of-the-box idea for Bills coaching on my screen from you. So I was curious what your out-of-the-box idea is.
Yes, my out-of-the-box idea is that Sean McDermott gets in front of the microphone today or very soon and has a huge revelation, and it makes news all across the NFL. I'm going to coach this year. If we do not make it to the Super Bowl, I'm not saying win or lose, if we don't make it to the Super Bowl, I will step down. I think to myself, if as an empathy way of thinking, that if I was him and I did that, how much more would my coaches work so hard because they love me, they want me to stay with the team, to try to win that, just that little bit extra at the end of these games? And who knows?
I'll give you the other side of that. You would have a lot of coaches saying, well, that means that I'm probably here one more year and a new coach, so I'm leaving, so I better start getting resumes. I mean, we both know, Greg, that is 0.0000% chance of that. And it's not just out of the box. It's fantasy thinking.
I guess it is. But you know, I think these guys make enough money and he's got enough money to live the rest of his life. Why not?
Okay.
Something like that. And then
I think every coach should do that then. How about every coach do that? Because guess what? John Harbaugh didn't beat Sean McDermott, or he hasn't beaten Andy Reid. Zach Taylor hasn't won a Super Bowl. Should every coach do that?
No, but if you've been doing this for 5-6 years in a row and you can't get over that hump, you know, I mean, let me ask you a question. Would John Gruden have made some of these mistakes that McDermott has made over these years?
I don't know. We're going down a big rabbit hole. I mean, your theory is just, we know that's not going to happen, Greg. I appreciate the call. I mean, and coaches aren't going to coach harder because he says that. And Sean McDermott doesn't say anything to make headlines, let alone something that outlandish. Let's go to Ernie in Williamsville. Hi, Ernie.
Hi, good morning. I've heard a lot of people talk about what they think Brandon Bean should do. But what I'm really interested in is, how does he do it? How does his operation work? They've got to reassess free agents, players under contract, draft choices, free agents from other teams. Can he do this all simultaneously? And do you think they've already started doing it?
Sure. I can answer that for you. I know how it works, basically, in general. So there's a pro scouting department and there's a college scouting department. They're all different. And then there's one person who's in charge of kind of putting them together. That's the personnel director, which is Terrence Gray in this case. So the director of college scouting is only putting his staff and going out to college bowl game or college games all season long, putting together scouting reports all season long. All of those are done. All the scouting reports. Now you just go to the bowl games, the Senior Bowl, those things, the combine. You kind of look at those players up close. You kind of see if everything you scouted all year matches it. But then on the other side, you have your pro scouting department. And all year, they've been monitoring every single team, contractual situations, how that player's playing, who's going to be a free agent, who's going to not be a free agent. And then they get to this point of the year, and they put all that together and say, here's our plan of attack. Does that all make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it gives me a lot more confidence in the final decision. Obviously, every choice isn't going to work out, but I think we should all be very...
I think I lost Ernie. Sorry, Ernie. I did not cut Ernie off. I just want everybody to know that. Let's go to Mike on a cell. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Sal. I know
hey,
the Bills
you're on.
Need
go ahead.
Speed. I know the Bills need speed and somebody who's an elite separator on offense. We need pass rush, but my biggest problem this year, my biggest disappointment was Ed Oliver. And I think Ed needs Ed needs a big two-gapping, space eater in order to be successful. And the Bills typically don't like those kind of guys. Do they shift their philosophy and they go after, like, the big kid from Michigan, Grant, or somebody that can demand double teams so Ed can have one-on-one? Or, and it's probably not going to happen, do you trade Ed? Because what they're doing...
You know, all great questions. All great questions, Mike. And I agree with you. I think, you know, we've seen Ed Oliver most effective when he has a guy like that next to him. And, you know, Daquan Jones did a great job of that last year. It wasn't as much this year, but the Bills do run a penetrating one gap scheme, right? You know what that means, where you're only responsible for your one gap and you go forward and penetrate. You're not trying to just anchor down and hold a guy up and then go left or right to guard two gaps. Maybe the Bills have to think about more of that type of scheme, but they like having a penetrating one gap scheme. I don't know about trading Ed Oliver, but hey, certainly. I mean, things have been done before. He just signed a contract extension, a year ago? So he's going to the second year of that contract extension. So anyway, or 2 years ago, I guess it would be. But anyway, Mike, thanks for the call. Good thoughts there. And, you know, you never know. I like what you think, though, about the D-line and how maybe you have to start changing your philosophy. We'll see what Brandon Bean has to say. We'll see what Sean McDermott has to say. 11 a.m. for Bean, 2 p.m. for Sean McDermott. We will carry Brandon Bean live here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. In the meantime, let's take a break. We'll come back here live down at One Bills Drive. Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio here, live from One Bills Drive. We are just about 15 minutes away from Buffalo Bills general manager Brandon Bean. We got a little bit of time for some phone calls. So let's get to John all the way out in California. Hold on, John. Maybe I can... Josh, you might need to bring up John for me here. Having a little sticky situation here on the computer. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Good morning, Sal. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy.
Hey, he was just talking to the gentleman from Bills Digest or Batavia Daily, and he said Bills receivers cannot get open. And so there's a debate about everyone eats, and don't have a number one guy. My question for you is, do you think it's personnel or do you think it's scheme that receivers can't get open? Because I look at the Kansas City game, and I saw a lot of guys wide open, and no one would say Juju Smith-Schuster is still a number one receiver. And I don't think guys were open just because...
Hey, John, before you go on that, let me ask you about the Juju. Did you see the one play? There's an all-22 angle. Juju was wide open on one play you're probably referring to, and clearly Kyrie Elam just got turned around and fell down. You know what I mean? Like, he literally fell on the play.
I read about that. It was, a blown coverage where he fell on man-to-man. Yeah. But there was another big deception right down the middle, and you're wondering where are the defenders. So my question to you, what do you think? Is it, do we not have the personnel?
I think they go hand in hand, John. I think they go hand in hand. I think you start with, you don't really have separators, so you have to come up with a scheme that tries to help those guys separate. But I think more than anything, you don't really have separators. I don't think the scheme is built in to not separate, if that makes sense. I think you could probably do a little bit of both on both ends. Thanks for your call, John. I really appreciate it. It's a good question. It's kind of a chicken and egg, right? No doubt about it. They don't have separators. And when I say separators, it doesn't mean all the way down the field. I mean in those intermediate routes. I mean off the line. You know, that's something Keon Coleman's got to work out on. Off the line, right? Down the field, he can separate with his body, not his speed. Khalil Shakir is the best separator they have off the line and in the intermediate routes. We've seen that. Dalton Kincaid should have been that this year. It didn't work out like that for them this year. But they don't have kind of the guys like we saw a worthy Hollywood Brown that were able to get some separation and open 10 yards down the field. By the way, thanks for the call, Matt, and hope everything's out. Everything is good for you out there in California with all the fires that happened recently. I think it was Matt. I'm sorry. This is Matt in Buffalo. Hi, Matt. You're on WGR.
How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks. Go ahead. You're on the air.
All right. For 4 years, we've lost to this team in the playoffs, right? And in those 4 years...
Four out of five, yes.
Yep. In those 4 years, we still haven't learned yet that we're not going to beat them defensively, especially in the playoffs. And we had Xavier Worthy on our draft board, and we're sitting there with a Super Bowl winning team who wanted them, and we're sitting there and we're saying we don't want them.
apparently. Yep. Why? They had a chance to draft him and they didn't. Oh, I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean,
but why? You got a Super Bowl winning team who wants Xavier Worthy, and you're going to trade them and get out of there? Doesn't make sense.
If the Bills don't view Worthy as worthy, no pun intended, by the way, of that draft pick, should they just take him only because the Chiefs might come up and get him?
I think you should have taken him based off the fact that he was the fifth best receiver in that draft. And because of
Well, that's a different argument. There's two arguments for the trade that happened last year. And this is a good argument, right? Matt, it's a good conversation that we've been having for almost a year now, which is there's two parts to this. Number one, if you don't have the evaluation on him, then what does it matter if you trade with whoever you trade with? If that's not your evaluation, you make the trade. And some people say don't trade with Kansas City, but if you're not going to draft them, they're probably going to make the trade with the team behind them anyway to get them. The other argument is what you're just saying, which you just switched your argument, which is, well, then maybe you should have evaluated him better for your offense, which I understand, and maybe they should have. Now, I will point out, up until the last few weeks, Xavier Worthy wasn't like a very big impactful player for the Kansas City Chiefs, but certainly he mattered in that game. But that is the crux of the argument in the debate, though, Matt. Which is, you know, should you, there's the part of trading with the Chiefs, and then there's the part of, well, maybe they should have evaluated Worthy better for themselves, if that makes sense, right?
Right.
Yeah, I get it, buddy. I get it. And we're going to be debating this all year, and I got to go, Matt. I got to go because I need to get to a break here before we get to Brandon Bean at the top of the hour. So I wrote an article at WGR550.com, has the Bills at the time, 2 days ago, yesterday, 19 pending unrestricted free agents. Since then, they have signed two players. One, Shane Buechel, has signed a contract extension, a quarterback who was on IR. And the other, Zach Davidson, signed a future reserve contract, which means reserve future, which means he's on the 90-man roster come March during the league year. So quickly, the 17 unrestricted free agents pending. Ty Johnson, Reggie Gilliam, Amari Cooper, Mac Hollins, Will Clapp, Tommy Doyle, long snapper Reed Ferguson, Dewan Smoot, Casey Tuhill, Kingsley Jonathan, Austin Johnson, Jordan Phillips, Quentin Jefferson, Ilianku, Tyreek Maddox-Williams, who's a linebacker they picked up late this year, Rasul Douglas, Damar Hamlin, and Kareem Jackson. We'll find out what Brandon Bean has to say about these players, the salary cap, the season, and a lot more when we head inside the Buffalo Bills media room and then bring you that live here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio down here live at One Bills Drive. We'll have Brandon Bean at 11 a.m. That's coming at you after this timeout. And then Sean McDermott at 2 p.m. later today here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Stick around for Brandon Bean coming right up.